So, there it is. You will always be fond of me. I represent to you all the sins you never had the courage to commit. Wait a minute. I recognize this quote. Nevermore. What the heck was that? So, the password, I guess? Open the secret door. So it looks like a laboratory. I just opened a drawer in the table and found what looks to be a notebook. Nevermore will I be a lesser witch. She underestimates me, but I'll show her. I'll show her who the stronger sister is. From the wonderful land of Oz, this is Fiction Crime Time. I'm your host, Adam Farmer. Ebony Airwood, the Witch of the East. Not born with magical abilities like other witches, but she found a way. Alchemy. The combination of magic and science. She was only one of Dorothy Gale's many victims. But I still can't move on. I can't go to the other crime scenes. Not yet. I have one more witness to question before I take the same yellow brick road to investigate the other victims. I have to question Glinda LaCosta, the Witch of the North. This will prove difficult because Glinda is the most important and powerful person in the northern land of Gilliken. It's almost like trying to get a personal interview with the president. It simply doesn't happen, unless you have connections. Lucky for me, Glinda has good relations with the Munchkins and the Emerald City Guard. All it took was two lucky phone calls, one from Mayor Browinian and another from Jacob. The meeting is scheduled to take place over the phone the day after I arrive in Gilliken City. I opted for the phone interview because since the killings, Glinda's guard set up many extra security checkpoints at her palace, and let's just say that if you thought airport security was bad, then I wouldn't recommend a trip to the palace. The trip to Gilliken was a long one. This time I took a steam-powered motor cart because I needed to get there quickly. On the ride there, I read the newspaper I picked up just before I left Munchkin City. On the front page, the headline read, Killer's House Finally Destroyed. He did it. The mayor followed through with it despite the protests against it. Dorothy's house was finally taken down, and now only an empty lot remains. In the article, many citizens voiced their protests against the mayor's decision, but it also mentions plans to build a monument in its place. In the press release, the mayor talked about how he wanted to have a monument dedicated to Ebony's life and the work she did for the citizens of Munchkinland, rather than one dedicated to her death. That won over most citizens, but there were still some who disagreed. I flip the page, and another article catches my eye. The podcast made the paper. The headline reads, Foreign Investigative Storyteller Tells the Witch's Story. Like I said before, newspapers around here are pretty straightforward. One person they interviewed in the article said this.
I think it's good someone's telling us what happened. The OBI sure isn't telling us anything.
Another person said this.
I don't trust him. He's a foreigner, like that Dorothy. They need to be working together for all I know.
Another said,
Why can't these reporters just let her rest?
It was a pretty mixed reaction. I understand what the first person is saying, but like I said before, I'm not doing this to undermine the OBI. Yes, it would make my job a lot easier if the OBI was transparent about their investigation, but they have their reasons for keeping quiet. If they told everyone everything, it may compromise the investigation, and we will never get the answers we're looking for. And that's the most important thing, the truth. I also get the second person. But just because we're both not from here, doesn't mean we're the same. For all I know, we may be from different worlds, or even different time periods. I don't exactly know how this world travel thing works, but I'm only sure that I have never known any Dorothy Gale. And the third person. I get it. You're hurting. And I'm just that jerk who swoops in and reopens old wounds. But I don't know about you, but I feel like Ebony would rest a lot easier with her killer behind bars and her story being told. All of that being said, I respect these opinions. I'm not here to make friends or make people like me. I'm here to find the truth. And if that's met with mixed reactions, then I'll live with it. I guess this means Agent Morgan isn't going to be too happy with all these waves I'm starting to make. But if there's one thing I've learned from my trips to the beach, it's this. Waves wash away the top layer of sand to reveal the seashells beneath it. And I've already collected a good bit of shells. For the rest of the trip, I look over one of those shells, Ebony's notebook. These are, of course, the photos I took of it and not the actual notebook. If you recall, I turned that over to the OBI. I read and reread the line at the beginning of the notebook in my head. I try to think of Ebony writing it.
Nevermore will I be a lesser witch. She underestimates me, but I'll show her. I'll show her who the stronger sister is.
I've been hearing this over and over again in my head since I found it. I made sure to ask around about it before I left Munchkin City, but no one knew anything. Ebony was an orphan as a child. As far as anyone knew, she was an only child, but there were sometimes rumors floating around that there may have been a sister. It makes sense. If Ebony was an orphan, maybe her sister was taken in by another orphanage or family. Ebony would deny these rumors, reiterating that she was an only child. That much she remembered. So if she continually claimed that she was an only child, why does this line say sister?
I'll show her who the stronger sister is.
Maybe the sister is just another witch. Maybe Ebony was in an argument with another witch in an attempt to be the top witch. I can speculate that it's possible. Ebony surely had some trouble with other witches since they were born with their magic and she had to work for it. I'll definitely be asking Glinda whether this is true or not. But moving on to the rest of the journal, I surprisingly can understand some of it. Not a lot of it, but some of its concepts. I have a base knowledge of chemistry, and I have a pocket periodic table with me at all times because you never know when I'm going to need it. Yes, of course I'm a nerd. I'm investigating crimes in Oz, for goodness sakes. In the journal, there is a clear progression of complexity the further in the journal that I go. The beginning is the most basic stuff, and it gets more complex from there. Some of these chemical compounds contain elements not found in the periodic table. My guess is that these may be the actual elements of magic in its basis forms. From the pictures and diagrams drawn in the notebook, I can tell that some of these pages show how to transmute certain objects into solid metals, like the golden apple I saw in the basement. I get about halfway through the journal when my head starts hurting, and I need to take a break. I barely even understood it all, and it's already killing my brain. Maybe Glinda could understand it better, or at least point me in the direction of an alchemist who can help me translate the journal. But till then, I decide to rest my eyes for a few hours. I soon make it to Gilligan City. Traffic was backed up about an hour coming into the city. It couldn't be more different than Munchkin City. I'm from Georgia, in a land called the United States of the World Earth, so I apologize in advance if this analogy doesn't make sense. But Munchkin City is like Blue Ridge, and Gilligan City is Atlanta. And we are basically entering Atlanta on I-75 under construction during rush hour with an accident taking up three of the lanes. To say it was a nightmare would be an understatement. Luckily, I wasn't driving, and I had a whole other day until my interview with Glinda. Always plan for a delay, folks. Anyway, I was finally dropped off in front of my hotel, and after I got settled in, I spent early that evening exploring the area around the hotel. I didn't need to make connections here as much as I did in Munchkin City, but I still wanted to familiarize myself with the area. I bought the local newspaper to help me do that. The front page had a headline which read, "The Wizard Still Missing." Now, we established in the first episode that the disappearance of the wizard was being investigated by the Emerald City Guard, while the Dorothy Gale killings were investigated by the OBI. I only reiterate this because in this article, several people suggest that there may be connections between the two cases. If you remember, this belief was the reason Jacob was taken off the case. Now, this may or may not be true, but let's look at the possibilities weighed against what we know. We know Dorothy Gale was in the Emerald City. We know she entered the chamber of the wizard. We know she then left the city. What happened during that time? What did she and the wizard talk about? What happened in that chamber? All we know after that was that the wizard left in a balloon, saying he was visiting a family member and would be back. He left some scarecrow in charge until he returned. But he never returned. Dorothy was supposed to be in the balloon with him, but got out at the last minute. Why was she supposed to be in the balloon? Did Dorothy know something that the wizard didn't know about the balloon? I honestly can't say. Maybe there is a connection. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe Glinda will have something to say about it. There are only two people who know for certain, Dorothy and the wizard. I wrote out my arsenal of questions and talking points in preparation for the interview. When the time rolled around, I called Glinda's office.
You reached the office of Glinda High Witch of the North. This is Fargus Twinkledexter, Esquire the Third speaking.
Hello, Fargus. I'm Adam Farmer. I have an interview scheduled.
You are approximately 30 seconds late, Mr. Farmer. I will have to see if she will still converse with you.
Like I said, this is nothing like Munchkin City. I wait for at least a minute, and they said I was late. Eventually, they got back on the line.
You're lucky. She'll still talk, though I wouldn't have permitted being 30 seconds late. Everything around here runs by the ticking of the clock. Tick-tock, my friend, tick-tock.
I was quickly transferred over to Glinda's phone, all the while I was thinking about what Fargus said. I guess they were referring to the giant clock tower in the center of the city. It must be the heart of the city. And the people are the blood cells, the rhythmic heartbeats of the clock moving the people from one place to another, giving the city life.
You must be Adam Farmer. I hope you had a swell trip to our wonderful city. Was it good? Bad? I've heard so much about you. I don't know whether to be scared or intrigued. What secrets will you pull out of me? What darkness lies beneath? Oh, this is so exciting!
Ma'am?
Oh, right. Look at me. I'm asking all the questions when it should be the other way around. I'm sorry. I'm both just so excited and nervous. I love true crime. It's so fascinating, and now I'm a part of the story. Oh, don't put this part in the podcast. You're not recording yet, are you?
Well, yeah, but this can be cut out if you don't want it in there.
Nope. I changed my mind. Leave it in. It provides a realistic point of view of who I am. Promise me you'll leave it in?
I promise. I'll leave in everything you say.
Oh, you're a sly one. I think we will get along great.
Okay. Now, are you ready to begin? I gathered from your secretary that the clock is ticking and we don't have much time.
Oh, Fargus, they're obsessed with that darn thing. But they are right. My schedule is booked, so we should have already started by now. You aren't very good at this yet, are you?
I haven't been doing this for very long, but Glinda is certainly the most interesting character I've interviewed yet. I have no doubt that this will be a unique interview, to say the least.
I'll start with the most basic question. How well did you know Ebony Erwin?
Oh, Ebony was such a sweetheart. It's a darn shame what happened to her. We only knew each other after we both became the witches of our respective lands. We got to know each other better on our diplomatic trips.
How was her relations with other witches? Did she have any rivals or even friends close enough that she would call them sisters?
Oh, we are all, of course, rivals. It's a cutthroat business. You thought politics was bad? Just throw in some magic and you got a bunch of little wicked witches. I like to think of us all as being frenemies. We push each other to become more powerful, but we do have a mutual respect for one another. But I certainly wouldn't think any of us would call another sister.
Did Ebony have a sister or any other family members?
No, not that I know of. But she was an orphan when she was a child, poor thing. So there may be some family out there somewhere.
We quickly get into a groove of question and answer, call and response, if you will. As Fargus would say, the clock is ticking. But luckily, this interview is working like clockwork. Yet it also doesn't seem to be going as I thought. I get the sense Glinda is holding back. I try to follow a different line of questioning to get closer to the heart of the case.
That night, Ebony died. How scared were you?
Congratulations, Mr. Farmer. You made me hesitate. I tried to shut out that night as much as possible. I was terrified. I'm not too proud to admit it. This was the first time a witch was murdered. If this sorceress had the power to kill a witch, no one was safe. I'll tell you what happened that night, but I ask no judgment of my actions. I acted as a concerned protector of Munchigan land.
I understand. Please continue.
I entered the house just after I arrived. I saw the girl and her dog. So much power in such a small body. To lift a house and bring it crashing down undetected. I immediately told the Munchkin Authority to set up a perimeter, not to keep Dorothy from escaping, but to keep everyone else from entering. Anyone who entered was in danger. That night was the scariest of my life. Waiting there in the dark for something to happen, all the while Ebony's body remained under the house. We didn't dare try to lift it while Dorothy was in there, so we left her body there. Something within me kept bugging me, saying that maybe if we lifted the house when we got there instead of waiting, she may have had a chance of surviving. Of course, we later found out that wasn't possible. She died the moment the house hit her.
I begin to get the feeling that I may have pushed too hard.
Do you need a moment before continuing? You can take all the time you need. If we run over time, we can schedule another interview some other day.
No, I'm fine. That next morning, we heard Dorothy talking before she emerged from the house. I can't tell you who she was talking to. Maybe it was the dog. Maybe it was some higher power. It could have been the great Ozma for all I know. When she exited the house, she looked at all of us in such a strange way. She asked where she was, and we told her. We didn't want to anger her. At this point, I had informed the others that we needed to get her out of Munchkin Land with as little casualties as possible. She saw Ebony's shoes, and she wanted them. She took them and put them on, and then pointed her towards the Yellow Brick Road. She denied being a witch, but I wasn't taking any chances. The Yellow Brick Road leads to the Emerald City. I thought the wizard would be powerful enough to stop her. I was wrong. He was not only powerless to her, but he disappeared.
Do you think there could be some connection?
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. I'm trying to be honest here, and honestly, I don't want to believe there is a connection. Because if there is, I feel like I had a part in it. As though I was the one who sent Dorothy to the wizard. If he disappeared because of Dorothy, it's on me.
I don't know what to say at this point. She can't believe that she is responsible for the disappearance of the wizard. Even though she did point Dorothy towards his direction, imagine the many other lives that may have been lost if she hadn't. She had hope in the wizard. No one should blame her for that. But this brings in a new aspect, a new ingredient, a new variable to the equation, a new element, if you will. If Dorothy was responsible for the disappearance of the wizard, then she is not just a witch killer. She may just be the most powerful and dangerous being in Oz.
That's a lot. We're both being honest here, and honestly, I don't know what else to ask. But for the record, I don't think it's your fault.
Thank you.
I think we're coming to the end of our time. But before I forget, I have photos of a journal I found at Ebony's house. It contains a lot of alchemy stuff, and I was hoping that you could help me understand it, or at least point me in the direction of an alchemist who can help.
Send the photos to my office. I'll call you if I come up with anything. Also, you should go talk to Isaac Flamel. He's an alchemist who lives just off the Yellow Brick Road.
She gave me the directions, and I thanked her for her time. Time. That is an important thing to the people here. Maybe time is something I haven't yet factored into the equation. The time it takes to get from one point to another. To kill. To come to terms with the killing. To justify it. Time. As the clock tower ticks outside my hotel room window, I wonder whether there is a time limit on this investigation. Whether Dorothy is beyond capture. She already has weeks, months ahead of us. But I'll let the OBI worry about that. I just have to worry about telling the story and finding the truth. My next step in my search for the truth is to return to Munchkinland to begin my journey on the Yellow Brick Road. On my way, I'll stop and talk with the alchemist Isaac Flamel in hopes of getting answers to the secrets that lie within Ebony's journal, before finally making it to the crime scene of the second victim, Bruno Bacchus the Bobcat. Next time on Fiction Crime Time. Thank you for listening to Fiction Crime Time. This episode was written and narrated by me, Adam Farmer. It featured the voice talents of Michelle Lee, Mitchell Witcher, and Zachary Tellez. Be sure to follow Fiction Crime Time on social media, at Fiction Crime Time on Instagram and Facebook. And guess what? We have a Twitter now. Look for us at @untrue_crime. Tweet at us with your theories and thoughts about the case, or any good memes. We love a good laugh. Also, follow these awesome voice actors. Just look for their social links in the description. It's an awesome way to show your support for these talented people. A new episode will be released every other week, so be on the lookout for episode 5 on March 2nd. And here's a special announcement. If we get enough of you to follow us on the socials, there may be a special Q&A episode in it for you. More details on that later. And, as always, remember that everyone has a story to tell, so don't be shy. Go out and tell yours. Thanks again for listening, you awesome storytellers.